place to fall down.
Yeah. End up in.
So why didn't you think it happened in other parts of the world, and why do they mainly take to farming in Europe and Asia, and not Africa?
Well, if you take the line that farming is a disaster for human beings, they'll only do it under duress. Because basically, once you, not only farming animals, but also farming plants, you actually have to work much harder. So why should you bother to work much harder? There are only three main reasons. One is your population explodes. And the areas where civilizations developed were areas where a very fertile land in the fertile Mesopotamian basin in southern China, where the population probably exploded. It also intersected with the second thing, which was a big climatic change. Having built up quite a lot of population and engaging in kind of hobby farming, just a little bit of maize and millet and so on, and a few animals, the population, there was an ice age, and suddenly the water rose, it got colder, and quite a dense population was forced into a very difficult ecological situation where they had to intensify their farming if they were going to survive. So it was a crisis. Now, both those things, very dense population and a crisis occurring in an area where you already had some domestication of animals and plants, just gave the boost and a warmth to the situation. And very soon, a third factor forced the peasantry to work very hard and to give them taxes. Whereas in Africa and Australia and South America, although it happened a little bit in South America, people, if they were told, you go and dig 8 hours a day there and give me half your produce, they say, no thanks, I'm off. There's a huge amount of space over there and there, and they just disappear. They vote with their feet. Well, if you're stuck in a little narrow river valley of good land, you really can't leave. And very soon, the people in charge have the military power and the social power to force you, and you get the development of slavery, serfdom, hierarchy, military conquest. So the history of the last 4,000 or 5,000 years has been one of destruction, oppression, and enormous social stratification, from which we've only really partly escaped in the last 200 years. So many people think that after a long period of good living as hunters and gatherers, yes, you produce much more with these animals and plants, but the standard of living of the mass of mankind, in terms of the amount of work they had to do, the oppressions they suffered, actually declined and declined. And there's only some signs of a pickup in the last 200 years with the second great revolution, which is the Industrial Revolution. This little buffalo here represents one of the great revolutions, one of the two great revolutions in human history. That is the domestication of plants and animals. For thousands of years, human beings had hunted and gathered. And then came this domestication. Well, most of us think of this as a necessary and inevitable progress of human beings. But there is a theory that, in fact, it was both accidental and a disaster. A disaster because it led, in fact, to much more hard work for human beings and the growth of stratification and the growth of large warfare and oppression. And so, if this is partially true at all, and people would have preferred to stay as hunters and gatherers, why did they move in this direction? Well, one part of the answer is that, in fact, human beings are naturally very poorly endowed with means of gaining a living. If you look at their bodies, they don't have fur or feathers, so they have to have clothes. Their eyesight is not very good, so anything that can extend that is good. Their ears are not very good. They haven't got a very good sense of smell, so they employ dogs as a surrogate for their noses. Their teeth, they don't have good chomping teeth. They don't have claws. They can't run very fast. So basically, they're a wreck. They really don't have much going for them except a very good brain. And they use this brain to invent something which no animal has. Animals have natural tools, like these horns, growing off them, but they don't use any more tools. Human beings use tools, which are basically adaptable extensions of the various parts of their bodies. For example, a hoe is an extension of a claw, and so is a plow. So human beings used tools. But we tend to think of tools as things like spades and hoes and guns. In fact, an animal is another human tool. In this case, what was being extended was the human gut and the human stomach. Humans, again, have very poor stomachs. They can't digest very much. For instance, if I try and eat this leaf, this tough leaf from the forest, I'd start chewing it and I'd get terrible stomach ache and I wouldn't be able to release the energy in this at all. On the other hand, if I hand it to my friend here, if he's hungry, he would digest this, and by doing that he would produce all sorts of benefits for me. For starters, if I just chop off his head, I have all this lovely meat. Secondly, if I want to use his hide for leather or his horns for drinking cups, I've got that. Thirdly, if it was a she, I would get all this delicious buffalo milk. Fourthly, I get all the manure to take down on the fields. So basically, this is the first human machine, a machine for transforming energy from the sun through plants to human use. And this machine is used in the Himalayas. The energy from the forest is taken down through the village. People eat and drink some of it, then it goes down onto the rice fields and then it's brought back. So it's a tremendous buffalo machine. And of course it's only one of a number of animals that can be used by human beings, horses, sheep, goats, and so on. And it's around this that one of the great theories to explain how and why human beings developed has been adapted. Most of us at school learnt the theory that the answer to the question of why civilizations developed in certain parts of the world, particularly in Asia, Eastern Asia, and in Europe, was because they were very favorably endowed with domesticatable plant species, grasses, and animals. And so you could get mass populations and the growth of cities and states and so on like that. So the theory which has been advanced based on this is that other parts of the world, Australia, South America, Sub-Saharan Africa, didn't really have the right plants. They had one or two, but not enough. They had just one or two animals which you could domesticate, but not enough. Horses and pigs and things weren't there. So it's a plausible theory, and indeed one might well say that it would have been very difficult to have this kind of revolution if you had been in Australia with the absence of mammals. But there's something more to it than that. There are two slight problems with this theory. One of them is that, okay, if you have a species that you can domesticate, you may domesticate it. But you may not. There are many other reasons than the fact that it exists that force human beings on. And this can be seen from the history of this village. Although there are buffaloes and there are goats, there are a lot of things that are missing in the way of animals, which exist all round. People know about them and they could easily bring them up to the village, but they don't. And the reason for their absence is shown by looking at the ritual, social and economic factors. Horses, for example. Why are there no horses here? There were horses about 40, 50 years ago. There are two or three horses in this village. They've gone because the rich people who were using them as prestige symbols, you can't really ride a horse around here much, and you certainly don't want it for ploughing because it would break up the terraces and the ploughs are very light. So they just had them as status symbols and they've gone, the people have gone. So you need a hierarchy for horsemanship. You need rich landowners and you need perhaps the use in armies and for military purposes. So no horses, but also no mules. I mean, it seems obvious you've got this steep, rocky things. Why do people carry everything on their back here? Why not just put it on a mule? Well, the reason is economic in this case. It's actually cheaper because human labor is so cheap here. It's actually cheaper to use your human back than to buy and feed a mule. So there is an economic reason there. Then you get ritual reasons. Cows, why not keep cows instead of these things? Well, one of the main reasons is that you can't in a Hindu culture eat the cow. So you've lost one of the main uses of cows. And they also don't give as much milk as a buffalo. So they're not really as efficient, and they can't eat as many. A cow probably wouldn't eat this kind of rough stuff, whereas buffaloes love forest food. So this is much better than a cow. What about pigs? Well, again, you get a ritual reason. Black pigs are ritually very impure and dirty for villagers. They won't eat the meat of that kind of pig. And so pigs are not very popular around here. So the pigs, there were one or two kept by the lower caste, but they've disappeared. So basically what one can argue is that just having domesticatable animals isn't enough, or plants. You need to examine the social and economic and ritual reasons. But there's another slight difficulty. The argument is based on the idea that certain animals have certain temperaments initially, so that the kind of proto-horse was man's servant, or the proto-dog was the man's servant, and you just sort of domesticated along a certain line. And these kind of animals fortunately lived in Mesopotamia and China, whereas all the cussed animals lived in South Africa and elsewhere. So you couldn't domesticate zebras, giraffes and things like this, and lions. You wouldn't get very far with domesticating a lion. But this argument again seems rather after the event kind of argument. Okay, they hadn't been domesticated, but one wonders whether over thousands of years, which is what happened, it wouldn't have been possible to have actually domesticated them. I think it probably would have been if there had been other pressures on them to do so.
So what do you think is, what do you think are the other answers then to this question?
If one asks oneself, so if it wasn't just the fact that these animals happened to be there and plants, what was it that really propelled just two places on Earth towards this kind of agricultural revolution? Why did people, putting it another way, why did they move towards disaster? Why didn't they stick with hunting and gathering? And here you have two or three factors intersecting, probably. One is that the old idea that people were hunters and gatherers and then had domestication is probably wrong. They'd probably been tinkering with domestication of animals and plants for thousands of years, but it was just a hobby. And in one or two places which were very rich soil areas along river deltas like Mesopotamia, you got population building up and building up. And so you began to get intensification of agriculture. And one theory is that it was population pressure which drove people towards intensification and this kind of thing. Probably wasn't just that alone. The second factor was probably a change in climate. A little ice age, certain areas flooded. And as a result, suddenly human beings turned what had been a hobby into their mainstay. They were forced up into certain lands which they had to cultivate. And so they began to become serious farmers. But there was then a third thing, because when they became serious farmers, they began to produce regular surpluses. And this leads into hierarchy. People come along and say, look, I'm a bit stronger than you. I would like a certain cut in your crops. So you get the beginnings of class systems and the beginning of states and aristocracies and military overlords. And these people then realize, why should we work? Why not do to these poor people what they do to their animals? Turn them into slaves. This is just a human slave here. Why not have slavery, serfdom? And so they forced people to work harder and harder. People would much prefer not to, and to give them perhaps half their crops and so on. So a combination of political forces, climatic changes, population pressure coming just together with certain kinds of animals and plants created just that conjuncture which suddenly allowed the first revolution to occur. But the disaster, as some would have it, was that for after a long period of fairly reasonable standard of living, hunting and gathering, you began in terms of the amount of hard work you had to do and in the terms of the amount of oppression of women and of the poor. The mass of humanity, not the top bit, but the mass, slid down into a world of more and more work and slavery. And that slide went on very late. Some would argue as late as the 18th century. And really, it's only with the second revolution, which replaced this animal machine with a real machine, as we conceive of it, driven by, not by the power from the sun like that, but by fossil fuels. That second revolution has liberated a large mass of mankind anyway from the consequences of the first revolution.